Yeah, good.
Alright, I'll endeavor to weave it. I sometimes think that Dharma teachings, that if the illustrious one, the Buddha, was alive today, he or she would have referred to the ninefold path rather than the eightfold path, and the ninth would have been right relationships. Given how much of the difficulties of life seem to occur around issues around relationships, and all the manifold numbers that there are, blood relationships, friend relationships, social relationships, spiritual relationships, etc., etc. Major, major area. So, firstly, the important words of the evening. I just had the whisper in my ear a few minutes ago that chai has been made, and that this will be provided, I understand, after the evening talk. Is that correct, everybody? That was what was said to me. So, pardon? He said, so make it short. Wonderful. Oh dear. Oh God. Oh dear. Such comments bring immediate humility to the Dharma teachers. We know the priorities, chai first. next time I'll announce it at the end of the talk. So some of you are leaving the talk early, I know why. Alright. Okay. So we'll talk a little bit about I, the world of I, me and my. In the Dharma tradition teachings and practices that take place, one of the most difficult areas in the teaching is to come to a clarity and understanding about this whole issue of what's referred to as not self, non-self. Sometimes mistakenly, and it's a rather serious mistake, it gets said and translated as no self, and this is the misunderstanding. Sometimes the no self language is viewed or stated to be, oh, everything is just there's no self, it's just energy, it's just conditions or whatever, as though that's somehow absolutely the way things are. And it's important to understand the teachings of not self, and therefore they're giving us the opportunity to look into life in a fresh and possibly somewhat unusual way from our everyday way of thinking. And so for a number of people who get exposed to teachings and practices do find it quite difficult to get a sense of what this not self teaching is. It's probably the one which raises the most concerns and the most questions and thoughts for people, just trying to comprehend it, even intellectually, let alone through depth of experience. And it's to kind of shake up our everyday way of looking at things and how we keep interpreting things in the same old way. And it's to kind of shake up the view, shake up the typical idea that we have. if we just take one simple example of that, the everyday mind will say, whoever, whatever the culture is, whatever the environment, whoever we are, the everyday mind will say, I am here, this is me, this is myself, this is me, I am here. That which is outside of this is not me, not myself, and not who I am. Therefore, the world and the reality of things, that this is the duality of life, this is me, that is not me, this is how things are, it's so obvious. Meditation practice, awareness, observation brings into question something like that, which seems so obvious that if it's so absolutely obvious in Dharma, one has a doubt, one questions, it's too obvious, and therefore one endeavors to bring a certain contemplative way of looking. Just to question that division, because of all that takes place as a result of that being the underlying way of looking. Every war has that. Every ism, homophobias, racism, all the intolerance has that as the underlying view. All the divisions within society, all the separateness that goes on has to have a support of a basic belief in a basic division, a true separation. All the apartheids that you and I find so distasteful is based on this is self, that is other, or this is us, that is them. Dharma teaching is questioning this self, other self way of looking and challenging its reality, even to the point of questioning whether it's a complete, as you said, illusory way of looking, whether it's a falsehood, whether it's a fiction, whether it's a collective self-deception. Sometimes, if one takes a mild comparison with this, lots of people will go to university for a 3-year period and gain some education and knowledge, skills, qualifications in order to go out into the world and develop a career, a job, or whatever it might be. Some people, and of course many of you know this, who own experience, will have spent, and still spend at times, periods of time in the army. And that, I think for men, is it a 3-year period? That takes place here in various kind of roles and functions, etc. Supposing society said, how about 3 years of practice instead? How about 3 years of looking into divisiveness, separateness? How about 3 years of questioning the inner life and looking and developing loving kindness and compassion and connectedness? Can you imagine what a different society we would be in? Instead of university 3 years, army 3 years, we said no, 3 years for practice. There, we could have a national service practice for 3 years. That'd be a real service to the nation. And therefore we close all the army training camps and all the universities and we fill them with meditators. It would be an explosion of change in life. It's a radically different way of looking. And sometimes we are willing, or we're afraid to be unwilling, to commit ourselves to that because we're told we have to do that. You're not allowed to not do it, so to speak. And it isn't quite so easy to generate even a small proportion of 3 years to work to discover what is the true reality of things. What could a human being discover that for herself or himself? So somehow the imbalances are obviously all around us, and yet the wonderful thing, whether we're here for 5 days or 10 days or whatever, this opportunity, real opportunity, and as we have been doing in the days together here, to really look into this whole question of self, whole question of I, me and my, and its showing, its manifestation, and how quickly it was pointed out, Catherine, the other evening, how I, me and my keeps wanting or keeps finding itself right in the center, as though life around just runs around for me. What's happening just involves me, and the self I keep slowing to the center. We can bring a lot of awareness to that. Bringing awareness to that. Sometimes we think the I, the me and the my is absolutely constant, always the same and always present. But even in the span of 24 hours, that isn't true. That isn't true at all. And that may show itself in its most simple form, the most obvious to any halfway intelligent human being. We come to the end of the day, we put our head down in the pillow there. What's the primary interest? The end of self. The last thing we want at the end of the day is for self to keep going on and on and on. We want to see the end of self. We don't want to be thinking about what we did yesterday, what we did tomorrow, might do tomorrow, and why we can't get to sleep. We want to see the end of I, the end of me, the end of my, and not only that, the end of this world. One doesn't want a single more thought about anything to do with this existence. The end of the day is the moment for the whole world to end and the self to end, and we go to sleep, have a nice deep sleep, and we think, God, I had such a good sleep, which is a way of saying, God, it was so nice not being in this world. So we have a daily interest at the end of every day. And as some of you have been reporting during your meditations as well, sometimes in the meditations one's little personal history, one's little storyline, I, me and my, going on about what happened and what might happen and how I was and how I will be and where I was and what I did and who I did it with and who did it with somebody else and you know, all those stories that we love to entertain ourselves with. We're mercilessly entertaining ourselves with, etc. And that's
the whole of one's kind of inner world is formed, and it's thick with the self, thick with the I, me and my. And sometimes we get on our, so to speak, metaphorically high horse about things, and then the I is very, very strong. I will do this, and I will do that, etc. And all of this, I, me and my, is building up there in the psyche there. And sometimes we see it for what it is. And the I, the me and the my that has built itself up just collapses. And it just kind of drops out of the psyche. And then there's just life going on around. Light and colour and sound and temperature and the unfolding expressions of the here and now going on, and we're just participating in it all. And this I, me, my has just disappeared, and there's a natural gratitude for it. One is not posited right in the centre of things because it somehow doesn't seem really true. So sometimes in the meditation, in a sudden awareness, in an insight, in a clear seeing, this I, me, my just dissolves. Sometimes the building up of I, me and my is in the form of not of arrogance and conceit and pride and self-importance, which we get caught up in, but the building up of it can take place through the putting of oneself down. It's another great way, strategy, to keep ego going. And one very good friend of mine, a good Buddhist psychologist from the US, said, and it's got passed on for about 15 or 20 years now. He said, or he wrote, to know the end of self, you first have to build up a strong sense of self. To know the end of self, you first have to build up a strong sense of self. And I actually remember reading this in, I think it was a book or an article that he wrote. And I thought, oh, please. Please, I hope he's regretted saying that. I'm not sure. But it got passed on for ages. What one can forget is that the putting of ourselves down is much a building up of self, as thinking one is God's gift to humanity, and building up the other extreme. So when the patterns of mind are reactive, and some of you have reported this over the days, and we start getting on our case, we start putting ourselves down, we criticizing and judgmenting, and we're sitting there in the standing, walking period, and we've taken on the role towards ourselves as being prosecutor and defense lawyer and judge and jury and executioner, and all of that's been going on towards ourselves just because we spilt a little bit of water on the floor in the meditation hall or whatever it might be. In fact, that is building up I, me and my. So this building, whether it's called bashing oneself up, beating oneself up, or boosting oneself up, still has the self in the center. If there is a seeing, looking at all of this, and a seeing through it, there is a growing understanding from us. It is a hopeless way of living. to keep boosting ourselves up or putting ourselves down. It keeps this manufacturing and production of the self going. And one of the common ways that we do that as human beings, of course, is through comparing. So sometimes, if we're feeling rather bad, the self is feeling bad about itself, and it doesn't know how to get out of it, it will look around for some poor sod to turn the attention to and put them down more heavily than one puts oneself down, so that in putting them down one actually starts to feel a bit better. Meanwhile, some other person, individual, group, country, or whatever it might be, we've dumped upon them, whoever it may be, or him or her, as a way to displace how we feel about ourselves or ourselves. And therefore we find we keep living in the world of self, as though it was absolutely true, like I said, and there was nothing illusory about it. And we believe in it. We've made a monster out of the self. We've generated the problems of the earth around the view of self, others and oneself. And the teachings say, please bring awareness to this. Don't just identify with the self individually or a certain collection of them. Look at that manufacturing net that we've done, and can, as so to speak, we get underneath it. Extraordinary thing to do, to question it. Plenty of, in our culture, in our society, in our scientific community, plenty of good questioning going on. No, we see that, and the tremendous achievements that have gone on, and the initiatives, and some of the things of that which goes on is just breathtaking. About communications and networks. And when just a year or two ago, in trying with Ram, the chai shop waller, outside the monastery gate in the Thai monastery in Bodh Gaya, and with Thomas from Germany, who's the Bodhisattva of Bodh Gaya, I call him, who speaks such fluent Hindi. And I said, and I was trying to explain to Ram that I had just been to the fax shop in the village, and I had put a message, this case to my daughter, on the fax. I put it in the machine, and exactly what was on that sheet of paper was coming out in England out of a machine in my room where I have my computer and my fax. And I was trying to explain this to the chai shop walla. First of all, he thought it was a joke, and he couldn't get the joke. And then Thomas went to explain it, and I found myself just feeling and thinking, just like Ram the Chaiwala. I can't get it. How does it happen? It's just beyond me. And so Ram and I are looking at each other, yeah, you're right. And all of that has come out of the breathtaking ingenuity of men and women who have thought a way to do it. What we are capable of is extraordinary, but we don't seem to be equally capable to looking at this whole world of self-ego and its effect and its consequences on our earth. In reading a commentary on the Hebrew Bible, and as it said that in the Hebrew, you will know better than I, that is it Satan is the adversary. Would that be correct? I mean, this is what I read. Anyway. Satan is the it means the adversary. This is what this commentary was saying on a passage. Anyway, whether it's true or not, I like it. And and in the Buddhist tradition, one has Mara, M-A-R-A, and it means temptation. Same thing. And in that respect, we can say that the force of the ego is a kind of adversary to awareness and wisdom. Force of the ego, where the I, me and my is strong, how much of it is so imprisoned into temptation? Going after this, going after that, causing difficulty, causing suffering oneself or others. I think it's a similar kind of perception of things. And that therefore there is a power, a capacity as men and women on the earth to actually look into the force of that, to see the consequences of that. And that means of bringing, as I said earlier, awareness as a stepping stone for all of us to see when are we reinforcing and substantiating I, me and my and self. And one of the indicators of that is when we are intensifying separation. One of the ways it shows itself to us when we are reinforcing separation. In the separation, greed, what the Buddha calls the three poisons of the mind, easily get stronger. One is greed. Greed meaning wanting and going after that regardless of consequences, regardless of the effect on others, on creatures, on the earth or whatever. This is greed. The force of wanting, this is the adversary, the force of wanting, going after those things regardless of what the consequences are. Another primary force of ego, another poison of the mind, is anger and the aversion and all the impact of all of that. And how that force arises, it's got I, me and my in it, or it's got us and them in it, and then the impact of all of that. And therefore the self in the greed, the self in the anger, is clearly strong. And sometimes on any situation you and I can experience and do experience that as the level of greed arises or the level of anger arises, so does the feeling of I, because they're going together. I want, I must have, I hate, I can't stand. So they work together. And the other force of the mind, the word used is moha in the Pali, M-O-H-A. It means delusion, but it's a widespread, wide meaning word. And it includes everything from the projections that we make, this is caught up, delusions of self, self-importance it might be, delusions can show itself as fear, as doubts, as confusion, etc. So it's kind of a single word covering a whole range of difficulties in personality, difficulties that are going on. But one thing, once again, even in all the delusionary activities, mental activities, we get caught up, the self is in the middle of it again, caught up in it all. And we see and experience the arising of any one of these three there, and as I said, the sense of I, me and my is strongest. And when those forces are not at work inside of us, I'm just talking temporarily and not absolutely, sometimes there's a quietness to the being, calmness and clarity to the being, and the sense of I, me and my seems genuinely very faint. Very faint. Just a quiet sense of, and it goes from I, me, my, to a quiet sense of I and my, which is just descriptive, not substantial. Very important point here. Just descriptive, not substantial. Description could be, right now, I'm sitting here. Just a description, I'm sitting here. Substantial is, I am sitting here, and you're down there. And the I is building. Therefore, conceit comes in. Pride comes in. Self-importance comes in, and when that comes in, of course, it generates increasing dependency, because it's a bit of a drug. And the I, having established itself as being self-important, it can't rely on itself to sustain itself of being self-important. There's not enough inner resources to keep the pride going, to keep the conceit going. But we end up having to look outside to get it, because the self cannot keep reinforcing itself as being self-important. It begins to get unhappy about it. It can't keep doing it. So it keeps looking for ways to get to feel important. And any way will do. So climbing up here could be a good method for self-importance, etc. Some have that view. And sometimes we do strategies to get the self-importance there, because it won't come enough, long enough, and big enough. So we'll use roles or whatever it might be. But if there is awareness in our life, and if, as much as possible, you and I are bringing, in this case, say, awareness to roles, as much as we can with all of that, there's the joy of the interactivity. And we get to know the difference between I, and in this case superiority, feelings and attitudes, and the joy of sharing, the joy of interconnectedness. And there's a huge difference in the feeling between one and the other, and the interconnected one, which includes the stars above and the earth below and the flowers and the trees and the temperature and the people and the lizard on the wall and the cats meowing in the night, as well as human beings meowing through the day, that all of that is somehow some statement about our co-participation. And if we have a feeling of the not-self sense, the not-self sensitivities, the not me, 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 I, my mental creation, we have a sense, as it were, outside of that, it will help all of us in our humanness to be conscious and aware when the I and my arises, and it goes from just descriptive, like I said, to somehow getting packed. Understand? Somehow getting sticky. Somehow holding together and building itself up. Or putting itself down. We'll need to know and appreciate the natural interconnectedness that all life forms share with each other through just breathing, just experiencing body, just listening, just observing, just feeling, just thinking, just sharing, just being together. Need to know that very, very well in our genes, not Levi's. In our genes, we need to know that well, to feel grounded in that as much as humanly possible, because in the background to that, when you and I find our I, me and my coming together, it will stand out more quickly. We won't take it as a true reality. We won't take it as authentic. We won't want to believe and substantiate it. Because we have a sense through our experience of what not self, not I, not me, not my is all about. And those things can happen naturally and easily and spontaneously, obviously. Tomorrow afternoon with Dan, the manager, Nina and I go to Elat and then to make the first visit into the Sinai there. And dear friends here have been encouraging myself to go over recent years and time and opportunity and to go, and I'm very much looking forward to it. And sometimes here and there and in other situations as well, sometimes we find ourselves in situations where our personal life, the life of self, has no significance whatsoever. It doesn't matter whether we went to university or not, or where we were born, or what our nationality is, or how much knowledge we have, or whether we did our army service, or whether we went to India or not, or whatever. All those things that make up the sense of self. Many, many things that make up that. Plenty of times and opportunity where it's of no importance, has no connection, no relevance to anything at all. And we can be in a retreat, or we can be in the Sinai, or wherever, and there's just the expanse of things. And that's all that there is. And the little insignificant little events that go on here have no relevance, no importance to us. What we forget is how profound that quality of experience is. That if in that experience we come to some clarity and some insight about that kind of expansive experience, which I don't think is so rare or so unusual, but if we come to some insight about it, the insight will have a significant influence on the tendency of the mind to build up I or to put I down. The Buddha uses this term, I can remember it, Jnana Bhuta Dasana, one of my favorite Pali expressions. And Jnana means insight. Bhuta, essentially, kind of the way things are. And Dasana, some of you will know the Hindu, the Sanskrit word for dasana, is darshan. Now, as the years went by, does everybody know the word darshan? Not everybody knows the word darshan, you're blessed. Darshan, in its contemporary use, is a common interpretation. One goes to see a guru, and one has darshan with the guru. That might mean just a seeing of the guru, or hearing the guru, or the guru puts her or his hands on the head, and one gets a buzz that way, or gets a mega big hug. And so one says, "Oh, I've had darshan. I went for darshan." And there's lots of people giving darshans, etc. So this has been going on for time in memorial, etc. Of course, going on in India for eons. And the Buddha took the same word, darshan, and gave it its original meaning. The true darshan is seeing into the nature of things. This is a lovely darshan. This is the best darshan. Because it's always available. You don't have to buy a ticket to Bombay to find the guru for a darshan, or import one of them, or whatever. The darshan with the here and now to see into the nature of things. This is the true darshan. So this is Jnana Bhuta Dasana. Sometimes, this is the great thing here, important thing here, from his own experience and what he communicates. Sometimes people have genuinely very deep experiences. There's no sense, no I, me and my involved in it. No, it's truly non-I, non-me, non-my, truly non-ego. Quite some illumination. Number of you, plenty of you I'm sure, had this in various ways, spontaneously in meditation, and sometimes through psychedelic, but then don't seem to be too profound, and etc. And that would be darshan bhuta, experience with the nature of things, experience with the way things are, experience with God, as someone said today, kissed by God, or whatever it might be. The jnana, that's the knowing, the insight, the realization, means that it's not just a short, impermanent experience which one had in a particular time, particular place, no matter how deep it was. Could be in a meditation, could be teaching, could be inquiry, could be with a guru, could be in the Sinai, etc., etc. The significant thing is not the experience itself. This is what the Buddha's tried to make very, very clear as a teacher. What is important is the insight that comes out of it. The quality of the experience will fade. No matter how high or how deep or how profound or how for the next, had deep experiences which he goes into, and for the next 7 weeks spent the time close to the tree, sitting, walking, meditating, reflecting, and formulating a way called the Noble Eightfold Path, Four Noble Truths, to communicate liberation, salvation. And therefore the experience and the insights all happening around the same period. So sometimes right in the middle of the experience, sometimes right afterwards, and it's not so unusual, sometimes people have come on retreat, they've had an experience in the past, days, weeks, months, years ago, and they say, it never made any difference to my life. That had this experience, I couldn't explain it. And then, in the course of meditation, course of just the days on a retreat, or other circumstances, the insights into that experience arose a long, long time afterwards. And out of the insights, that made an extraordinary difference to a person's life. So sometimes it's simultaneous, sometimes it's soon after. Sometimes it's 10, 20, 30, 40 years. I just had giving a retreat, and the person who's in the early 60s had very deep experience when they were 21, and on the retreat they realized the significance of it. Mm-hmm. And all those 40 years had gone by. And then the understanding came of what that meant. So in the field of exploration, all of these discoveries can, and we're not looking for dramatic experience as I say, can be a wonderful resource for us, and the outcome and the benefit of it is we don't feel so much at the mercy of tendencies to boost ourselves up or put ourselves down. We just don't feel to be at the mercy of such tendencies, and this brings a much more natural sense of freedom of being. That's the important thing, I believe, to understand, rather than conceptually trying to work out all this Buddhist stuff about self and not self, and who am I, and who is it that knows I'm not a self, and who knows that, etc. So complicated there. So it's a much more simple awareness of watching the ego arise, seeing it when it's peaking, seeing it when it's middling, seeing it when it's dissolving. Those experiences where we're not lost in the world of I, me and my, natural openness, natural receptivity, and perhaps out of the dynamic order of that, much insights will come. And if ego, the adversary, is losing its problematic issue which generates for ourselves and others, then the power of it is dropping out of consciousness. All Dharma teachings point all of us to that. Very lovely and sweet and freeing teaching. May all beings live with awareness. May all beings dissolve the forces of egotism. May all beings live a free and happy life. So let's have our couple of quiet minutes together, shall we please? And then I'll just have 2 or 3 minutes to a couple of things to say after.